I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to the Featured Anime Podcast. I'm your host, Jack.
And I'm Rick.
And today we are talking about that time I got reincarnated as a slime, which was kind of a uniform choice, kind of a both us choice type thing. We talked about it, discussed it, and decided to roll with it is what we ultimately ended up deciding. Right? Yes? No? Maybe?
I think so.
I hope.
Like, originally, I was like, we should totally do it, mainly because I wanted to rewatch it.
Yeah.
But when you agreed, it made it even better.
Right. But before all that, we were honestly talking about our experience, first time streaming on Twitch, which is where we're going to be live streaming from now on for all the show recordings and everything like that. Talked a little bit about Yu-Gi-Oh! And some other things. If you want to catch a part of that wider conversation, you could join us live, or you can go to patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. $1 a month will get you access to that bonus content and more. And now on to the me and Brotatoes. That time I got reincarnated as a slime, came out in October 2018, ran all the way through March 2019. Producers for it are Atlantis, Kodansha, BS11, Bandai Namco, just to name a couple. Studio for it is 8-Bit. It's based off of a manga. The genres for it are action, adventure, comedy, fantasy, and isekai. And it's 24, I want to say 25 episodes. Because
it's 24 and a half is what they call it.
Yeah, which is basically a recap through Vildora's perception as to what's going on and everything that's happening within that world for him.
Kind of a nice, I thought it, in my mind, it wasn't just a recap, but it was a retelling from a different perspective. Well, you just said that, but I thought it was a really nice perspective, but from someone who's basically fangirling.
Yeah. Yeah. In a manner of speaking, yeah, that's actually, that's almost exactly what he was doing. He was, basically fangirling the entire time, which, yeah, it is what it is.
I loved every second of it.
But all right, so the basic of the story, right, is you have a man who becomes Rimuru, the main protagonist of the story. He's in his 30s. He's meeting one of his junior coworkers to kind of go out on a I want to say like lunch, dinner type thing or whatever. And, you know, he's kind of tired of his monotonous lifestyle. He's never had a girlfriend or anything like that. And so while they're out, a dude just is running through the street, holding a knife in front of him, I guess so that way he hopefully stabs someone. And so Rimuru ends up saving his younger friend or intern or whoever, right, his younger counterpart, and gets stabbed in the process and dies. Well, while he's dying, he's saying like he wishes he wasn't cold, he wishes he wasn't hot, he wishes this, he wishes that, how much this and that. And so this system starts stating exactly like what it's going to grant him basically in the next life, and as a result he gets reincarnated as a slime, as the title would would entail, like as it was suggest, right? So this story is the entirety of him being a slime, and it's not that he's just a slime and he's slowly going through the world. He has a consciousness, he has his life experiences, and he's taking that and applying it to the new world he's in. And him not understanding the rules of the world or anything like that is just like kind of progressing through, and he is crazy strong for a slime. And this is like insanely strong to the point where you're like, you shouldn't be that strong for a slime.
Well, think of it like this. Here's the best way I can describe what actually happened. Let's say you're playing a game and you don't know there's more levels. You just know that you're in a enemy-rich location, and after a little bit, you're able to assimilate these other powers. You're able to learn and consume, and you have a unique skill called, what was it, Predatory, yeah. Something like that. And whatever you eat, you gain their powers. Now, if you were to make that game and I would play it, I would assume eat everything I could, just like happens here.
To be fair, he just doesn't gain their powers. He gains the abilities to mimic them and other things. So he can break down anything using it, mm-hmm. and find out the details and traits of it and even recreate or copy it, assuming he already ingested the materials. He basically has an unlimited size item bag in his stomach that he can house anything in of any size at all, in all honesty. Like he will eventually, it may take a long time for him to get to it, to consume it, but he is able to consume it.
And it's so nice. And the way that, just like you said, it's kind of like an item bag. If he can take it, if he can eat it and he can decompose it, he will gain its benefits. So basically you're in a level one area and you're farming to your heart's content. Do you know how long he was there? I feel like it was a couple years. He was just consuming and farming because he didn't have any eyesight. He didn't know what was going on. He was just happily content in his level one zone, so to speak.
They don't specify a time frame for it. They don't talk about the timing for it at all. You just, when you're given a reference of time for it, it's very vague. And when you're given like a hard timeline for it, it's when Rimuru comes in contact with Veldora, who,
yes,
at that point, says, I've been here for 300 years and I would likely die in another 100 years because of this. And so you're given that expectation, that viewpoint to where, okay, well, he is trapped in there. Not trapped. I want to say he was sealed away, and because of confined, him being confined because of this, he's not able to regenerate his magic or anything like that, which is causing him to die. But it's not a fast death. He's been there isolated and alone for 300 years, unable to have a conversation. But since Rimuru is there, he was able to have that conversation, but he's still not able to break out of the barrier. And so thanks to his ability, he's able to consume it and compress it and move on.
The barrier, take Veldora inside of him after they've had a conversation. Now, what I thought was really, really, really interesting was, while yes, Veldora is very powerful, the barrier around him it doesn't really consume its own Veldora's magic. It does prevent him from regenerating the magic, yes, but I feel like it's sapping it away and giving it to the surrounding area, yes. Which is why the area that he was in was so rich in magic energy. In these crystals that he's able to compress into regenerative juice and energy and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons why he was able to become as powerful as he was.
Yes. But
after talking with Veldora, he's like, I could probably analyze this from the outside, and the system, which is incredibly helpful to him, allows him to learn a bunch of stuff, such as seeing the magic around him, visualizing it and then creating eyeballs and seeing stuff like that.
Well, they visualize the eyeballs, but he doesn't technically have eyeballs. It's just what the creators decided to visually represent, right? To give him to help. Because, just looking at a blob that doesn't give any kind of facial expressions or things like that is kind of...
Oh, yeah, no. I understand that it's mainly for us, but... what I was trying to imply was, Rimuru, while he's not able to use his faculties typically,
right,
once he gains the ability and the power to replicate other beings, then he can use the optical thing. And I think it even says in episode one or two, like, wow, things look different. I prefer to see it the way I saw it before because I got used to that. It's one of the reasons why you can't sneak up on him, because that vision is always active. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get that. The other thing is, I'm glad that they touch on it. I'm glad they talk about it. And they make this distinction very early on in like the first or second episode when Veldora is talking to Rimuru, and they further expand on it and clarify it is, and you're even showing this at the very beginning too, that people come to their world through two means. One, they are summoned, or they are reincarnated. And I'm assuming the reincarnation aspect of it is not as common as people being summoned, but it is common enough to where they know about it, right? Or they're not, it's not that they're reincarnated as a monster. They're reincarnated typically as humans who go on to become heroes. And for him to be reincarnated as a monster, I think is an unusual aspect. It's an unusual viewpoint of it.
So this is going to sound, I know I'm backtracking just a little bit, but I find it to be humorous and kind of important. When he's stabbed initially, when he's going through the whole death process, the funniest part in this whole show to me is he's begging his counterpart, just delete my computer. And I think that comes into play when it's choosing what abilities. He goes, well, I haven't ever been with a woman, so I'm probably a grandmaster wizard. Okay, those abilities have been granted. I'm cold. I don't want to be cold. Those abilities to be neutralized. Okay, I don't want to be hot. No problem. Electrocuted, no problem.
Yeah,
he gets all these resistances. And when it's going through that system, when it's like, okay, you're going to get this power. You're going to get this power. You're going to get this power. And we're going to give you a unique power. You envision, before you get to see anything, this monster, this absolute unit of a being, and then it's a slime.
Yes.
But it's a slime with all of this ability and power
and resistances. Like level one
with resistances and stuff like that. And you don't think of that. So whenever anybody meets Rinmaru in his slime form, they're like, oh, it's nothing. But after he consumes Valdura, he ends up emitting this power that he's just walking. He's rolling, I should say. And everything and everybody around him sees the aura. They don't see him. He's insignificant. Everybody's running away because they see this power.
So here's the thing, right? Let me cut you off. So like, they see the power, but is that his power that he's radiating, his power that he's seeing, or are they seeing Valdura's power? Or are they seeing a mixture of the two? Because it's not just him that he's like carrying around, and it's not like while he was sealed, they weren't able to sense Valdura. They were able to sense him still, even though he was sealed away. And that's what kept a lot of the monsters and everything in check, is because he just radiated this aura, right? Mm-hmm.
This control, like somebody who's in charge.
Right. So my question is, right, and I know you're not going to have an answer, just like I don't have an answer, is like, was that just his he was radiating, or was it everyone else's? And I know that they insinuate that they kind of tease that it was his, but was it?
Personally, I think it was. And here's why I think it was. He actually, in a comment section, Old Man Jeb said something very good. Valdor's power and naming, it's a combination. So when they became friends, they named each other. And in this anime, naming has an immense power.
Now,
if you're strong enough, benefits too. If you're strong enough to name somebody, you are indicating you're stronger, or at least stronger, or the same level as they are. Valdura named him, and he named Valdura in a mutual naming pact. That's why when that happens, you see them shine and stuff like that. And what's kind of awesome is, in my mind, and the way I think they kind of said it, anything he consumes becomes a part of him. Now,
yes,
he consumed the shield that was containing Valdura.
But he is not able to make it a part of him. So that's the other thing that you need to remember. He consumed it so that way he could analyze it, so that way they could figure out how to break it. But that's touched on beyond that than them continuing to try to do that in the show. Like, he consumes it and moves on. Now, I'm assuming, like, especially from episode, which one was it, where it's like episode 12 or something like that, halfway through, when he consumes Ifrit, and he and Valdura are fighting. So I'm assuming at some point, the shield had broken. It's just he can no longer let Valdura out.
No, that hasn't happened yet, because that in this one.
No, I know it hasn't happened yet. I am saying, like, at what, like, because if you remember in 24.5, right?
Mm-hmm.
He is sitting with Ifrit making the moves. Like, he is sitting directly across from him, and he's able to interact with him in a manner of speaking.
Mm-hmm.
There is no shield in between them. And it's not like he is saying, and it's not like I'm saying, oh, the shield's just gone now. I'm saying that it eventually got to the point where he was no longer being housed in there, and he just can't let him out, right? He can't let him out because, one, you know, maybe he just doesn't know, it wasn't notified or something like that, or Veldora was able to pull him inside the barrier with him, which doesn't make sense because he's able to, if I remember correctly, isn't he still able to kind of use Ifrit?
Yes. So Ifrit becomes absorbed into his, into him. Like, Ifrit isn't sealed like Veldora was. The only thing that remains was the psyche that Veldora was able to seal. Like, he was able to take away from the power. Because anything that Rimuru eats due to predatory, he consumes entirely, and it becomes part of him, part of his power.
CJ in our chat helps clarify that he can choose to either fully consume it or house it. And Jeb then clarifies also, the unlimited imprisonment is not broken if it is a spirit, and while they are both inside, it's a shared space.
Thank you. Now, what I was trying to say was, in my mind, he consumed the barrier.
Right.
And as we were saying before, the barrier was leeching power off of Veldora and giving it to the surrounding area. So my logic part, to make logic out of that, the shield didn't stop siphoning power off of Veldora. It just gave it to Rinmaru directly, which is why I think his power was like, that was his own power rather than they were seeing Veldora's power. Because remember, when Veldora was consumed, everyone was like, oh, he must have died. We can't sense his power anymore. So that's why I thought that it was actually Rinmaru's power rather than a mixture.
I'll buy it. I'm down for that. I'll accept it.
So, but yeah, no, what was interesting to me is...
Let me rephrase. I'll take the part that Veldora's power is completely gone. I will not take the fact that that you're saying that it's going to Rimuru. Yes.
Okay, so... In the way that you see it, the shield stopped doing what it was doing, or the ceiling stopped doing what it was doing consumed.
I don't think Rimuru's absorbing his power. That's what I'm saying. It's still being kind of leached out to him. I just don't think that it's that Rimuru's own power is overshadowing and masking Veldora's.
Okay. It's so tough because I have more knowledge than just season one, and I'm not supposed to use it for here. So I'm trying to justify in the space of the first season.
You and I both have the exact same knowledge.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm not having that hard of a time. Because
you have the ability to compartmentalize. For me, it's all one thing and it's great.
It's not great. It's kind of annoying.
Well, it depends on perspective.
CJ says Rimuru is trying to analyze and destroy the shield, but he isn't using Veldora as a battery, so to speak. Rimuru is OP as hell. And then Jeb further clarifies Veldora's power is being absorbed by Rimuru. The unlimited imprisonment can still leak his power. That's why the beasts behaved in the forest. So CJ is kind of like agreeing with me. Jeb's agreeing with you. And then CJ says, if you have more knowledge, you would know that that's not the case, sir.
Well, I mean...
Just such anger. It's for a
post show.
Right. Okay. There you go. We'll save it for the post show. There you go. Season two is still right around the corner. Okay. Let's not forget about that.
I'm hoping like next week. Hopefully. We'll see.
It is. So there you go. You already know what next week's choice is. Congratulations.
just hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
Hint, hint, nudge, nudge.
But aside from the power scale, which I found immensely pleasurable, I liked how everything was done in here up until this point. Past that, they stop talking about how strong he is, because it's already known he's crazy strong, and he was able to suck in kind of all of the power that was just emanating so that no one can know it's him anymore.
Well, it's not that he sucked in the power. He just that's the visualization they gave. He just basically sealed his power from emitting, you know, because the reference that he said was, oh, I've been walking around. It's like I've been walking around with my fly down the whole time. Yeah. Just, and no one's like pointing it out like, hey, bro, you're totally just showing yourself off there. And so he then at that point controls it to keep it, you know, from leaking out. It's not that he decides to, he's emanating it still. And then he's in an infinite feedback loop where he's sucking it in. He's just like out there wandering around with his fly open, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's not, he's concealing. And that's a good way to put it. He's concealing his power rather than walking it, letting it all hang out. And what I found really interesting is he starts willy-nilly naming everything and getting everyone's loyalty.
Oh yeah.
And he, you see these goblin things, just these wretched, just barely better than animals, this old decrepit leader, all that stuff. And he starts naming everybody and then passes out. He wakes up to everyone looking a million times better than they were, with power that is unrivaled in their race. It was wonderful. And he was able to gain a following. And then every issue that he ran into, he either consumed it to become stronger, or he made them an ally also to become stronger. And the world building that occurs in the first 12 episodes, I found to be really, really well done. Like, if this was a game, I would buy it 100% of the time. I would play it 100. This was Final Fantasy.
Don't tell me that. You wouldn't play it 100% of the time, because there is a game out there for it, if I remember correctly.
For it, yeah, not of it. Like, this reminds me of Final Fantasy, not the Gachapon stuff on, because like, I played that one too.
Okay, so when you say okay, I don't think I'm truly understanding what you're trying to talk about then when you say the game, but we'll get into that later on.
Okay.
What's really cool, and to continue on with the story, right? When he's going around, and to piggyback off what you were saying, is, you know, the naming aspect of it, and where he's able to gain the respect and everything. The names also hold a lot of power, but when he names them, he's basically evolving them. But he's also naming people that have more power, more magic, or whatever beyond him too. And when that happens, he ends up passing out, especially when he uses names too many people. He passes out because of it, because they just have a larger mana pool or something like that. I can't remember the exact discussion where, because it happened when he was naming the ogres. Do you remember exactly what they were talking about when he passed out and why that happened?
Yes, basically every time you name something, you share your power with them and vice versa. So basically, if I was to name you, my power would be given to you, mix, and come back. And so you would go to your maximum, and I would take your maximum and add it to my own.
That doesn't seem right. Power, that doesn't seem right.
But the reason why he passed out was the stronger beings you name, the more mana it takes.
And yes,
he
ran that out. Is correct. The him taking the mana, that's not correct. Like, I know for a fact he doesn't do that. He doesn't take it, mix it, and then spit it back at them.
Well, then how does he get a much larger mana pool by naming people?
He doesn't get a larger mana pool by naming people. It draws on the mana pool by naming people.
So he adds them as a battery?
What? No, he so doesn't add anyone as a battery. He literally uses his magic, his magic in general, to name them. And so he's using magic to name them, and it's causing his magic to drain.
Maybe I misunderstood, because I thought when he named something, he became stronger as well.
No, that was never discussed or talked about. Like, they never inferred that.
So CJ says every time he levels up, his health and magic go up. It's like a game. So I have a very severe misunderstanding then.
Yeah, so what you're thinking is like when he uses the predator mode and he absorbs someone to get their powers and everything like that, he's gaining strength like that. He's becoming more powerful like that. As he continues on, he will continue to get stronger and everything like that. But it's not like he doesn't gain strength to name them, which is why monsters aren't typically named, because it serves them no benefit to name them, like, at all. Like, if that were the case, people would be going around naming every monster they possibly could that didn't have a name, or trying to rename them, right? It's because if that were the case, there would be no unnamed monsters, right? Because someone could go around at that point and start naming themselves and leveling themselves up and continuing on to level themselves up at that point. And that's not not how it's done. Jeb in our chat also says he does absorb some of their skills, but shares them with all of them that has named. That's interesting.
So explain this. How was he able as a slime to name Valdura? Don't you have to be stronger than somebody to name them?
Well, that's one of the things
when that happened.
Right. And that's one of the things that he says, right? Or that they talk about in the show is when he's going through and he's naming someone that's stronger than him or has a larger mana pool than him or something like, or they specify a particular strength than what he currently has, he passes out, right? Basically goes into quote unquote autopilot mode for the duration. And then that's it. So when he named the six ogres, he passed out and doesn't remember what actually happened. But he, as far as the skills, he doesn't gain any added skills from naming anyone. He just, you know, grants them power. And again, because that were the case, he would be, everyone would be naming everyone because everyone would be getting skills and becoming more powerful. I see.
Okay. So something just clicked. CJ in the chat says he got stronger by Valdura because he ate all those magicules that he thought were just stones. So in my mind, here's how I can rationalize that. Valdura was there for 300 years. He thought he'd only have 100 years left, which means 3/4 of his strength was dispersed into that cave, which Rinmaru was able to consume. So that's how he was able to get a stronger mana pool or a larger mana pool because he absorbed 3/4 of what Valdura did. That's why he didn't pass out when he named him. Does that sound like it might be, that might work?
Well, Valdura was also already named, right? So Valdura, from my visual perception, didn't glow or anything like that. He's just like, oh, I now have a last name because he's Valdura Tempest instead of just Valdura. Rimuru, however, was given the name Rimuru Tempest, so he was named, and he was stronger like that.
Okay, so technically, so adding one name in addition to doesn't take as much magic?
No, he didn't name Valdura. Valdura is just like, oh, I will totally run with this name. He didn't technically name him. It's just what Valdura is going to go around calling himself from now on.
Okay. I could have sworn in the animation you saw everything light up, but maybe I misunderstood that. CJ says that Valdura just added to the quantity of production of magicule rocks rather than the fact that they're there, because apparently they're just there, but in smaller portions. Valdura losing his magic made the quantities become greater. And when Rinmaru was in that cave and consumed everything he could find, he accidentally became massively powerful based off of the surroundings. Okay, so that makes sense. So I was wrong in the sense, in my thought process, that by naming somebody, you got stronger. Interesting, though. Interesting that 4 ogres were stronger than Valdura, as far as like the need to name.
Yes, and then again, they also, and CJ also confirms this too, that naming someone is dangerous because if you don't have enough power, you can actually die from it.
That makes sense. He names a bunch of things, people, a bunch of everything he comes in contact with. He's like, you need a name.
Well, and there's a reasoning behind it. It's not like he's just naming people just to name people willy nilly. He's doing it because, one, to create a society and make it so that way it's more human like. And that's kind of what he's modeling after, since he used to be human. And he goes on to clarify this in the show as well. He's also going around and creating ties and treaties and he's creating those relationships with everyone despite him being a monster. And so instead of people just like going out there killing monsters just because, or in general, when they have a certain level of intelligence, he's not like going up there and naming an ant, right? One of the giant fire ants or whatever. He's just
naming allies.
Yeah. He's naming people that are of an intelligent and sentient mentality. So you have basically a subgroup of species. So you have humans, quote unquote monsters, even though they're not really monsters, and then you have monsters, right?
Yeah.
So, and the people that he's naming are the people that are of an intelligence. They're able to progress. They're able to think and talk and communicate and things like that. And so they, you know, are able to strategize and things like that. And those are the ones he's making the ties with. Those are the ones that he's maintaining contact with, and he's helping grow and name, and everyone else is like just a normal monster. So they're going out there. They're still slaying like the deer of the world. You know, they're going out there, they're harvesting, they're fishing, they're all that other stuff.
Now, I thought was quite interesting in my mind was his whole objective. Rimuru's objective, the entire show, is he just wants to live a peaceful life. And in order to live that peaceful life, he's got to kill a crap ton of people and become strong enough to implement this peaceful life.
Well, no, it's not necessarily that he has to kill a bunch of people to implement that peaceful life. It just kind of ends up working out that way, where he is kind of forced into it, right? Where he's forced into a situation where he has to kill someone, or he has to fight someone, or something like that, you know. And it's, and again, it's not that he's just doing it just because, he is like put in the situation. So like the Orc Lord incident, right? He's not killing them just to kill them. It's because he's forced into a situation or a position where he has to. And then he takes everyone else in. He takes them all, everyone else that's survived or alive after the fact, in. So he's not just, you know, hey, go about your life. He's like, I'll take you in. You'll become, you're going to provide the this, you're going to do that, and everything like that. So
I guess. Yeah, I mean, he became public enemy number one, not just because, well, not public enemy number one, but he became a public enemy because everyone else was putting their own ambitions on him. Like, well, this is what I would do in this situation, so he must be doing the same thing. We got to stop it. And it's just, the confusion that caught that the chaos that caused all of this was kind of funny in my mind. One misunderstanding after another just made it to where who was already overpowered just became a monstrosity.
Okay. Yeah.
And eventually I feel like he'll be able to, I guess, be the one to enforce, even though he's not going to be, he'll be the one who's able to push back for a society that he deems worthy. That makes sense?
Vaguely. Yeah. I mean, there honestly, there's a lot that really happens to this anime. There's a lot that goes on in here. There's, you know, a point at which you know, he really tries to grow the relationships, and everyone starts like getting afraid, or they're looking at it as like, we need to create this and we need to validate him, so to speak. So when he goes to the dwarven kingdom, right, the king realizes the strength of potential, and he has him watch, and so he's like, we need to go there, and we need to, you know, make sure that we're, you know, we're on the right path, you know, to gain the strength, right, to be their allies, because he foresaw that in the future that some next level stuff was going to happen. And I'm honestly glad and happy that he looked at beyond the fact that he was a monster, right? Saw the potential, saw the strength for it, continued, you know, like to strive for those connections, so to speak. You know,
it goes towards the way that the world is being built and everything. And it's honestly one of the better parts of the show. The world building that we see is, it makes the show. Everything else, like, you could have a superpowered person wanting to make their own way, and yeah, you know, the show's a flop because there's what are the reasons? What are your troubles? And the thing I like about Rinru is he's not fighting for himself. He's fighting for others. Yeah. And when he finally meets, I'm drawing a blank on her name, the mask chick, where he gets the mask from.
Oh,
I know. It starts with an SH. It's not Shinsui.
No, I know who you're talking about, though.
Yeah, it's the woman who was summoned from another world, who had Infrit inside of her.
Shizu.
Crap. Shizu. I knew it started with an SH. And like, he saw her and was like, you're the one I love. You're the one that's been destined to me. I saw a vision of you. And of course, tragically, she dies, and he's like, I'm going to get revenge for you. So he's got a mission unto himself. He's got a purpose other than peace. And when you realize the difference between his power and the potential power of those that are, for lack of a better way, too strong to care. I guess that'd be a good way to put it. You realize just how much further he has to go. And it is so nice to see that. Well, I mean, it sucks to see that you could have, if you were in that position, you could have wiped them off the face of the earth and not really cared all that much. But the fact that you didn't care and you have now, as a show, a mountain to climb, so to speak.
Right.
An objective.
But he also sees that, too, at the exact same time when he meets Milim, who's one of the Dragon Lords, and or not Dragon Lords, Demon Lords.
Demon Lords.
Thank you. And he finds out, like, there are a lot of people that are crazy strong and a hell of a lot stronger than he is. And so what's interesting and what sets him apart from everyone else is, like, she, you know, she asks him straight up, is like, don't you want to become a demon lord? He's like, no, I got enough on my plate. I don't want that. I don't need people coming to try and attack me all the time.
And she goes, I think I'll do it for you then. You don't want to do that? I want to fight you.
Yeah. Like, so there is that.
The fact that she's so strong, like to a really scary level, I would say, for no reason. Like, she fights and she has fun, but when she's serious, she just wrecks everything. There's no competition. Like, before her feat of strength, I thought, okay, Rinmaru could have a problem, but eventually, you know, it'll be okay. No, she's straight. Too much power in one person, in my mind.
Well, that's the thing, right? So instead of her being reincarnated, right, and they're the person that has that's OP as all hell, you're given the fact that one, Rimuru is not the reincarnated, overpowered as all hell, and it's there's other people that are far stronger than he is. It's just he needs to progress to a point to where he can stand on equal footing to not die from a single sneeze.
Achoo, you're dead.
Yep.
Well, yeah, no, it's so nice. And the progression, the future that you can possibly see here, the future that has the potential to be, is just wonderful. And the really, really worrisome thing for me is the lack of, at least the way that I saw it, and the thing I liked Rinmaru above everybody else, he cared about life. You know what I mean? He cared about the impact. And when you're summoned to this world, you're typically a kid and you got to grow into this power, but you'll end up dying because it's a power overlord. There's no, you're not born of that world. So you don't really have a regulator for all that power. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And Rinmaru, upon Shizu's death, finds out that she was a teacher and her job was to teach these people, these summons, because she's much older than them, because she had a superior spirit, Infrit, placed inside of her.
Yes.
And her job was to teach these other kids, because when you're as strong as these kids, you're not going to listen to anybody normal, because why would I listen to you? I can beat you up. Very immature.
Well, the reason why that she was teaching them and training them is because she was trying to give them kind of a semi mostly normal life and figure out a way to save them, because they would be dying soon anyways. And it's not that she knew how to do it, or she was ordained to teach them because of this or that, or because she had the spirit. It's what she wanted to do. Ultimately, that's what she chose to do.
Yeah. When you're as strong as she is, you're not told what to do. You choose what to do. And that's,
there are a lot of people that find her really strong, but there are other people that know that how strong she is and they can beat her. They just look up to her.
Okay. I didn't know that part. I thought that she was just super strong, mainly because she was a summon and then Infrit. I didn't realize there was a bunch of people that just could murk her. But what I thought was quite interesting is, upon her death, Rinmaru, who was reincarnated rather than summoned, goes, you know what? These kids need some assistance. They need some help. I'm going to go do that for her. I'm going to do that in her place.
Well, to be fair, he doesn't exactly say it like that or view it like that. He goes, I'm going to fulfill part of my promise and go help them, because that's what he ultimately promised her. Like, what one of the promises is that he would go help them. And he's just like not doing it because he wants to. He's doing it because he's honoring the request of Shizu.
I guess. I mean, I saw it as, in my mind, that's one and the same. He wanted to honor the promise. He wanted to do that. So in my mind, that was Yeah, I can see where you're coming from with that. But what I was saying was he went there and they respected him because he was strong and he could give them manga.
Mostly because of that, but he had to earn it and show that he was stronger first and get to that
100%. So 100%. And he would, because of that, he was able to figure out which element they would probably be most associated with. And he did more research, and I thought it was really awesome that the answer didn't just immediately present itself. He had to search for it. He had to find it. He had to like actively go after it rather than shit just happening to him. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I don't think it was the finale of the first season, but it was close to it. When he was able to save the kids, there was one spirit in particular that I found troubling because it was like a future.
Well, that's what they claim, and that's what they view. But honestly, at that point, we'll start getting into more conjectures or views and feelings and the random spark notes that you chose to read at what point.
Oh, yeah, right.
So I feel, Rick, at this point,
how did you know?
Is going to be a great spot for us to leave a rating. How about you?
Okay. I can work with that.
All right. So on a scale of up to 10, sir, how would you rate this?
I would rate this a solid 9.
Okay.
Solid 9. The only reason it's not a 10 in my mind is the last little bit was episode 25 was just a recap. Again, fangirling all day long, but I really did not find the level of adoration that Veldora gives Rinmaru to be pleasant, I guess. It was unsettling for me.
You just try being isolated and alone for 300 years and have someone actually come by and talk to you, you know, and carry on a conversation. Well, there you go. I can understand.
You're the one that talks to me all week. I'd go crazy.
Right. So there you go. Then you can completely understand where he is coming from.
I still find it annoying.
All right.
But yeah, that's why it's not a 10. And you, sir?
It's a great question.
Come on, give your 4 or something.
I mean, like, if you want me to give it a 4, I'll give it a 4.
I mean, it is your honest opinion. You just dislike this show so much.
Right. Pointing out a lot of the facts and things that are counter to your rose-colored goggles that you wear. For me, I'll go with an 8. I'm going with an 8 because when the progression was a little slow, there were certain points of it or certain times where I just felt it a little aggravating or annoying. They did have a couple of points in the anime where there were a couple of episodes, especially kind of towards the end, where it just kind of felt shoehorned in. I understand that they're trying to explain what's going to go on, explain what's happening or explain what will happen or kind of give you a taste for it. I just felt it deterred from the story as a whole. The progression I find a little bit weird, but enjoyable, but it's just not 100% my taste. So that's why I'm giving it an 8. The artwork is nice. It's solid. The music for when it is there is solid. It's good. The comedy in it, it's really great. There are plenty of funny moments, plenty of funny points in there. So it's definitely a show that's well worth the watch. So yeah, 8 for me, 9 for you. Next week's choice, as we alluded to earlier, we're going to be talking about season 2 of That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime. I know that Rick's looking forward to it. I know that I'm looking forward to it. That's honestly it. That's all I got. I got nothing else, sir. You got anything else?
I'm good.
All right. Wonderful. Well, if you thought we got something right, something wrong, did it too much justice, not enough justice, plain all went off in the weeds, just plain all being dumb or anything like that, feel free to reach out to us. We have all our contact information for you available in the show notes as well as on featuredanimepodcast.com. If you want to become a patron, here are the pre and post show content that we usually put out with every episode. You can go to patreon.com/featuredanimepodcast. $1 a month will get you access to that bonus content. And if you want to help support us through other means, we do have affiliate links for you in the show notes as well. It's always very much appreciated. And we do appreciate anything that you do. If you click on those links, you purchase anything using them, we do get a little bit of a kickback and it is very much appreciated. Or you can buy our own merch at shop.featuredanimepodcast.com. And until next time, I'm Jack.
I'm Rick. And we'll see you next time.